Hey, this is Darrell Revis, and this is the Jets Blog Podcast.
Welcome back to the Jets Blog Podcast. I am your host, Corey Griffin, and with me, as always, on the other line, it's Brian Bassett. Hey, buddy.
Hi, Corey. It's been a while. I mean, it felt like we were talking, you know, every day there last week, and now it's been like, gosh, I don't know, 6 days since I've talked.
You know, sometimes space is good for the relationship, Brian. Sometimes you just need a minute.
I don't need a minute. My wife needs a minute. Yeah. Yeah. So she, yeah, I understand.
Well, your wife and I see things similarly.
Very true. Very true. So no space this week. The Jets are getting a pretty good opponent, huh?
They are back at it, although we'll debate on the quality of the opponent. I have some thoughts on the Kansas City Chiefs. But before we get into that, a quick reminder that if you like this podcast, if you like podcasts about any of the New York teams, the Mets, the Rangers, the Islanders, the Knicks, all those wonderful teams, the Giants, make sure you subscribe to the SNY.TV audio network, where you can get all of SNY's original podcast content, including this podcast. But you can also find SNY.TV/Jets or the Jets Blog Podcast on wherever you listen to podcasts, Downcast, iTunes, Overcast, all those wonderful places, Audio Boom, Stitcher. You can find us there. You can find the SNY.TV audio network there. But the only place where you can rate and review us is iTunes. So please go there, leave a review for the SNY.TV audio network, leave a review for the Jets Blog Podcast, star us, let us know what you think, and we would very much appreciate it so that other people can get a sense of our wonderful audio content and the wonderful audio content across the SNY network. Speaking of which, Brian, we have got to deliver some wonderful content because this is an important game for the Jets. The Chiefs represent a chance for the Jets to not only get above 500, but it's probably I don't want to call it easiest opponent, but it's probably the least challenging opponent that the Jets will face on their schedule for the next few weeks with the Seahawks, Steelers, and Cardinals coming bang, bang, bang right after this game. The Jets are in the Chiefs for a 425 start. You know, you mentioned that is a pretty good opponent. The Chiefs have yet to impress me this season. There are some major injuries on the defensive side of the ball. Tom Bailey hasn't practiced this year or this week. Obviously, the stud pass rusher, Justin Houston, has not played and will not play this weekend. Jamal Charles has not played. He will make his ginger debut this week. Ginger Lee, however you want to follow. I found weird saying Ginger Lee debut.
Hair?
Yes, he will have red hair for the week. Okay. No, but he will be making his comeback this week. He likely will not have a full road. He will share the ball with Sharkhandrick West and Spencer Ware. So it's a three-headed monster. But Alex Smith has had a very bad start to the season, and I think this is a very winnable game for the Jets. And Vegas seems to agree. The Jets are only three-point underdogs, which, considering is a road game, basically makes this a pick 'em.
I think that's the thing. You know, right, Alex Smith has not looked good. Right. But Alex Smith has not looked good in the start of the season without Jamal Charles, as you point out. Right. And we don't know how much he's going to see. And right, he's going to be going up against a tough defensive front. But I mean, I guess my big argument here is, yeah, we've not seen fully operational. This Death Star is not fully operational, yet from the Kansas City Chiefs, because I mean, Jamal Charles is a game changing player. He's a once in a generational running back talent. And so has he done a good job in the past? And yes. And is this now kind of his second knee injury? Yes. But I mean, he's still a pretty special player. And so I have to wonder if his being in the game is going to, you know, open things up for everybody else.
It could. I mean, look, Jamal Charles, when he's healthy, is a phenomenal player. And who are we to doubt his ability coming off of injury? Spencer Ware, for his part, has looked pretty good. Sharkhandrick West has been okay, but I think Ware has kind of taken over as the lead back in the absence of Charles. I don't worry about the Jets stopping the run. I just don't. You know, Damon Harrison or no Damon Harrison, when you put Sheldon Richardson, Leonard Williams, and Muhammad Wilkerson and Steve McClendon and some of the other guys out there with David Harris at linebacker, I'm just not worried about this group stopping the run, especially with the rookie Jordan Jenkins, who looked good in the preseason, expected to play this week, assuming that he's in game shape. He practiced fully this week for the first time this regular season. I think that this is a defense that is set up. Here's the thing, right? Next week I'll have more concerns against the Seahawks, against the Steelers, against the Cardinals. I'll have more concerns about this defense. But with Alex Smith's limitations versus where the Jets are weak on defense right now in terms of deep passing, in terms of the secondary, this seems like a game where the Jets' strength matches up with the Chiefs' strengths and the Jets' weakness matches up with the Chiefs' weakness.
I think that's a great point, right? And that's probably why Vegas is going the way, you know, you're saying is, you know, they see this as winnable, right? I think, yeah, you're right. For as good as the Jets' defensive line has been, you know, the Jets' passing defense hasn't been that good. And I mean, I don't know, you know, you've got Jeremy Maclin and Travis Kelce and I don't know, a lot of not much else in that offense. And right, Alex Smith foundering, but is this a chance for him to get well, right? You know, and so I'm definitely with you. Will things change this week for the Chiefs and kind of what they've done so far? But right, I think you're right that this is a good matchup. It does match up strength against strength, and that might favor the Jets. But I mean, you know, then you have to think about, okay, well, you know, what's happening with some of the Jets players, right? Is Marshall going to be fully healthy?
That was going to be my next thing. Yeah.
Well, so what do you think? What do you think his play or not play matters in this game?
So I'm of two minds on this, as I tend to be on things that walk a tightrope. I have problems making decisions, Brian. Okay, I waffle at times. I don't necessarily look at things and take a side, so to speak. There are two minds of this in my head. One, you can sit Marshall out and get him healthy for that really tough stretch coming up. Okay. Seahawks, Steelers, Cardinals, they're going to need him against all three of those teams because they're most likely, at least against the Steelers and Cardinals, they're going to have to put up at least 24 points against both of those teams to have a chance to win, most likely. Against the Chiefs and Seahawks, I think you can get away probably with the low 20s or maybe even the high teens as the Chiefs has played the last couple weeks. That said, you know, the key to the Jets' offense this season against the Bengals and the Bills has been those three wide receiver sets and having three reliable options, whether Onunwa lines up in line, whether he lines up wide, whether he lines up in the slot. Having all three guys on the field has created matchup problems, and putting guys like Onunwa or Decker in the slot on number three cornerback is part of that. So if Marshall does dress, if he's able, if he's physically able, and he hasn't practiced this week, and I don't think he has to practice in order to play, but if he does play, you would assume that he is going to draw Marcus Peters on most plays, which then puts the Jets in an advantageous position of matching Decker and Onunwa up against lesser corners. Whereas if Marshall doesn't play, you're now looking at Peters taking away one of those two guys and now having to rely on Jalen Marshall to compete or to compete against high level defensive backs and actually fill in for an adequate role as the number three option outside of the running backs.
It's a good point, right? I think if you can almost, you know, throw Brandon Marshall as a human shield, you know, in this game, maybe you do that. Maybe that works for a half or a quarter, right? But sooner or later, they're going to start to realize, okay, he's not right, so we're going to roll coverage away from him. And then once they do that, you know, then it becomes, right, the chess match of, like, can you actually use Brandon Marshall to effect, or is he, right, is he just this human shield in this game if he's, you know, if his knee isn't right or hasn't fully kind of recovered from that hit he took, you know, it'll end up being, what, 10 days prior by the time of the game. So I think that's a great point. And so there might be some snap count finagling that the Jets do if Brandon Marshall is active, and how they use him and deploy him and when they use him and strategically, like that for me, like I know we've had some talks about you know, the offense and calling what here and, you know, what there. I think this will be a really interesting test if Brandon Marshall is active. How do they use him, and how do they use him to a strategic advantage, even if he can't catch the ball, right?
Yeah, I wonder if Marshall doesn't play, or if he plays and he is essentially nothing but a decoy. I wonder if this is the game we finally see the Pal Forte on the field at the same time packages that we saw them sprinkle in during training camp specifically. It just seems to make sense that you can create matchup nightmares with Pal on the inside against either try to get him on a linebacker so he's too fast for them, or get a Onunwa on a safety or a corner that can't cover him. It just seems to make sense that if Marshall is in play, you have to create a matchup discrepancy somewhere, and a guy like Powell in the slot is the kind of guy that can do that.
Right, and they did that last year. That's a great point. I kind of forgot that they had done that, you know, that they used him sometimes, right? They were using him in the preseason. I kind of forgot about that. So that's an interesting thought. Two questions I have for you. So this is going to be my first for you. So you mentioned Matt Forte. There's been some made of the snap counts and the workload that he's seen in the first 2 weeks. What is your take on that? Like, are you worried about how much they're using him and how little they're using Bilal Powell? Okay.
Yes.
Talk to me about that. Why?
Because I don't care if you don't believe in the legend of 30-year-old running backs, but when you have two capable ball carriers, it's just common sense to split the carries or at least go for some sort of 60-40 split. Because if you're going to be a playoff team, you're not playing for September. Like, I get it. You know, Matt Forte was a hot hand against the Bills. You gave him the ball. He paced the offense. I understand that. But Bilal Powell is a good player. You know, this isn't – I don't even know who you want to – you know, this isn't Steven Ridley. You know, this isn't a player who doesn't really deserve a spot on the roster but is just there because they have to dress a second or third back. This is a legitimately, you know, fringe or starter quality level player. That I think deserves time and deserves snaps, because what you need Matt Forte for is you need Matt Forte in November and December when you know, you are playing not necessarily the best of opponents, but you're rounding up for the playoffs. You want Matt Forte to be healthy. And I don't care if Forte said this week, either Thursday or Wednesday, that he thinks the 30-year-old running back downslide thing is a myth. There's plenty of history that says that it's not.
I would say, I mean, he's the exception that proves the rule, right?
But like, is he? I mean, we've seen it after two games, but we saw LaDainian Tomlinson in his first year with the Jets. He was gangbusters the first half of the season, and then he slowly lost effectiveness, and especially that second. Here's the other thing that I think that they need to consider. This isn't a one-year deal.
Yeah, it's a one-year deal, right?
So it's a two-year deal.
It's done on 1 year and then eat whatever money you have to next year. That's not what anybody's looking to do. So yeah, I'm with you. I definitely will say, like, I understand that there was a lot of talk over the summer that this was going to be a 50-50. I never thought it was going to be a 50-50 because it just doesn't make sense, because Matt Forte is so much better than Bilal Powell. I love Bilal Powell. He's one of my favorite players. Okay, we'll talk. I'm not going to pull up all the, you know, efficiency numbers, but we can.
I'm not arguing about the past. I'm not arguing about Matt Forte at his peak versus Bilal Powell at his peak. Okay, well, Matt Forte at his peak was a great player.
Some carries. Let's see Bilal Powell take some carries or catches, and then we can have some efficiency numbers to grade them against. But anyway, I'm just saying, I think Matt Forte is a superior player, and so I understand why you want to play him more. But right to that effect, if you want to play him for, you know, in November, December, January of this year, then you've got to, you know, slow your roll a little bit, right? And so they definitely have to do that. I hope they will do that some more. And Bilal Powell's a great player, you know, if you use him in the right spots. So that's one thing. The second question that I had for you was Quincy Enunwa. Let's say Brandon Marshall can't go in this game. Do you think we've seen some great play from Quincy Enunwa in the first two games? And I know you're a big booster, and that's great. And I think I'm impressed. It's, you know, it's taken him a little while, but he's kind of found this kind of tight end wide receiver role that is, you know, working for him. Can he be as effective or more effective if Brandon Marshall isn't in the lineup?
I don't know, but I'm fascinated to find out. I think if Brandon Marshall doesn't
find out, I don't want to have to find out if Brandon Marshall's out of the game.
No, like, I don't want to, you know, look, the Jets are a better team with Brandon Marshall, but as a football observer, as a bipartisan kind of fan looking at this game from the outside, I'm kind of fascinated to see what happens if Quincy Enunwa gets thrust into an outside the X receiver role. Because if Marshall's out, that's what's going to happen. They're going to try to keep Decker inside. Maybe Decker slides in and out and Jalen Marshall moves in and out. But Enunwa is probably going to be slide into that Marshall role that, let's be honest, he's probably going to take over for a full time next season. If you look at the money, if you look at the Jets salary cap, it's not unreasonable that Quincy Enunwa is the starting outside receiver next year for the New York Jets. That's a far long way away, but I also would love to see
dress rehearsal. If Brandon Marshall doesn't go, we need to look at that as a dress rehearsal.
Yes. But I think the other fascinating part of it is who he draws in coverage, because I'm a big booster for Quincy Enunwa. I was going into the season. I have been so far this season. I think the adjustments and the changes that he's made to his game have been remarkable, considering the amount of time they've happened in. Yeah. But if he draws Marcus Peters, that's going to be the best corner that he's ever faced on a regular basis. and Marcus Peters is you know, already one of the 7 to 10 best cornerbacks in all of football. Maybe
he's what we think Darrell Revis is, right? He's right now. Well, think Darrell Revis is.
Yeah, I mean, well, we can have the Revis conversation. We'll have that conversation. I want to get into his Asian talk and all that in a little bit. But I'm fascinated to see what Quincy Enunwa does against someone who's extremely talented, is a good ball hawk, almost like a good version of D'Angelo Hall. I would say, like, if D'Angelo Hall were good at football, I think that's kind of what Marcus Peters is. He takes a lot of chances in terms of jumping routes and playing aggressively, and that results in a lot of interceptions and a lot of game-breaking plays, but it also results in getting burnt sometimes. So I'd just be fascinated to see that matchup.
Right. Just to see how he fares. Right. I think that's the thing for me is I am thrilled with the productivity that he's had through two games. I'm tickled by it. But at the same time, I also worry, is he kind of the remora on the shark? Right. Like, is he able to pick up those numbers because he's, attached himself to, to the
Marshall
great
and Decker.
That is Brandon Marshall or Eric Decker. Exactly right. So I am kind of curious to see if he can break out from their shadow. I don't want to have to see it. But like, if I'm forced to see it, I'm with you. It's going to be a good indication of what they're going to have to do in coming years, with this receiving core.
Yeah, the interesting thing for me in talking about the passing game is last week against the Bills, it was a lot of single or half field reads for Fitzpatrick, right? That's when he was very successful, when he was able to diagnose single coverage before the snap, identify his target, and say, I'm throwing the ball here, I don't care what happens after the snap. And that worked out in a lot of ways, or having two, maybe three options on one side of the field and three defined routes. Against the Chiefs, I think, and we'll, bring up Peters again, but I think that what you're going to see is you're going to see the Chiefs do that, but you're going to see Peters be the guy that's in single coverage. So I'll be interested to see how Fitzpatrick's lack of arm strength comes up against a guy who's very good at jumping routes and has a penchant for taking those jumped routes back for scores. You know, in Kansas City, this is a place where, the crowd is an actual factor. I know that Buffalo was absolutely loud and crazy, and the Jets dealt with that very well. But Kansas City is a different animal. It's a wild place, and it's a different place, and the crowd seems to actually make a difference. It's one of the few stadiums where that matters. How much do you buy into the fact that a legitimate home field advantage for Kansas City?
I mean, it's hard for me to extricate myself from like the history of the home field advantage that Kansas City has maintained. I mean, you think about the days of Neil Smith and Derek Thomas and Barry Word and Christian Okoye, and I mean it was deafening that Kansas City back in the day was this the CenturyLink field of the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s, right? So, like, it has that ability. I don't know that that it's lived up to it over the last, 10 years or so. But I certainly think that their fans are pretty rabid and pretty into it. I definitely think most teams do not like playing in Kansas City for obvious reasons, because I do think that there is a home field advantage. It's not as famous these days, right? Like, as I say, as Seattle's 12th man, but it's still up there as a pretty good home field advantage. So, that could come into play if they can
an early big play
out, and right. Yeah. I mean, that could be, bad news for the Jets.
Yeah. Although they did deal with it well. I mean, they were on the road in front of a raucous crowd that had been drinking since Tuesday. There was a big early play, and they responded very well. And they responded to another couple of big plays in the third quarter as well.
Bills fans. Yes.
Yeah. True. Can I interject a personal note here?
Oh, sure. Of course. Yeah.
So my dad is going to the game this weekend with some friends of ours. Hello, Jeff. Hello, my dad. I'm sure they're both listening at some point whenever they download this. I am legitimately upset I'm not going. Obviously, it would be an amazing experience to go to the game, but I'm upset I'm not going because Kansas City is essentially Mecca for my favorite food choice that is not tacos.
Yes.
And barbecue. Barbecue. Having stopped through Kansas City once and eaten at the Oklahoma Joe's gas station, it was like eating at heaven. And it was amazing, and it was just perfect. And there's like other places that I want to go, and I can't. And I would love to smell what that parking lot is like at like 8:30 or 9 o'clock on a Sunday morning before a game. Insane. And just people, I imagine it's essentially like just people walking around in rows, and then people just like outstretched hands of brisket and ribs and pulled pork. And all these wonderful accompaniments and sauces. And they're like, here, have this best rib that I made in my backyard for 3 days and you'll never have again. And I'm just really upset that I don't get to experience that.
I'm sorry, Corey. But, you know, I mean, you've got important things to do. You've got to pick out floral arrangements and cake toppers. And,
you mean I've got no. Not pick them out. I've got to pay for them, which is why,
No, you just get to pay for them. I like.
Well, to be fair, in case the fiance does listen to this, we have to pay for them. Right. So it is not exactly the smartest thing to drop a grand on a 2-day trip to the middle of the country for a football game.
Well, you know. Jeez, you're growing up, Corey. What the hell's happening?
I know. I dislike it. Speaking of growing up, Ryan, Darrell Revis is all grown up, and some would say for not the better.
He's turning sour.
So there was one report specifically this week that sparked a lot of anger.
So dropped the dime.
Well, yes, it was within a report that the title was essentially, is Darrell Revis a Hall of Famer? Which literally I want to print out and take a poop on it and then ship it to the writer who wrote it, just to show him what I think of his work. That said, inside that story was an anonymous source, a single source, who said that Darrell Revis is out of shape this season. Now, Revis had off-season surgery. He admitted as much this week that, you know, having off-season surgery, he just got really back into working out like late into the summer before camp because of the wrist injury. You know, you can't lift. You can only do so much cardio to stay in football shape. Do you buy that Darrell is out of shape, or do you buy that this is Revis's contention that this was his ex-agent Schwartz and Feinsod, our wonderful, wonderful friends of Jets Nation and Jets Twitter, who are spreading lies to try to discredit their former client who fired them this offseason?
Well, I think you've asked two questions, right? So the first question is he out of shape? And all I would say is I'm not seeing the same level of play that I've seen out of him as in years past. And I know that as an outworking of the way the season ended last year, there were comments and quotes which he made saying that he was going to work extra hard this offseason to be ready and prepared for this season. I'm just looking at the empirical data of what I've seen, right? At the end of last year, and I understand there was injuries were in play, but there's been a whole 9 months or whatever, and now a whole new season and, you know, two games, whatever. And it's not looked great yet. So, you know, so I'm questioning the abilities which I've seen. I'm also right. We've got, you know, now, you know, the firing of an agent. So there's some sour milk there. There was some sour milk last year. If you remember, with or sour grapes, sour milk. What am I talking about?
I mean, they're both gross.
That's true. Yeah, put them together. It's really gross. With his buddy Geiger, John Geiger, when that 60 Minutes thing came out, and he was flaming, you know, he was just throwing bombs about how, you know, fake and whatever. And so right there, there's kind of like the facade, the mystique is crumbling, right? We've got that, and right, so now we've got the story, and so you're sorry, so I've gone so far off course, I can't remember what we were talking about. So is he out of shape? I'm just not seeing the same guy that I've seen in years past. That was the first question. The second question was, do you think his agents were behind this? I certainly wouldn't put it past them. I mean, they've done all kinds of shady stuff in the past, right? And the guy who wrote the article in question is notorious for just basically throwing bombs, right? That's what he does.
From those agents.
Yes. Exactly. So it smells pretty putrid, you know.
You know what it was like? You know what I read? I was just like, I think that like they probably called Manish and were like, yeah, this is a little too thin. Let's go to the national guy who is, you know, going to seem a little more unbiased.
So, but I'm with you, right? I'm with you. Like, it certainly isn't helping matters. But now all I can say is there's only one response from this, and it's what Darrell Revis does on the field, right? He is in control of the narrative from here, and that the first step of that has to be on the football field, right?
Yeah, no, it's true. And he's going to get an interesting test this week in Macklin.
Yeah, true. Who is a sneaky good player, right? I don't think he gets a ton of respect, but I think he's a sneaky good, technically sound receiver. He was the guy that I wanted the Jets to draft instead of Mark Sanchez, instead of moving up to draft Mark Sanchez.
Yeah.
If that means anything, I don't know. It doesn't mean anything.
Well, ironically, two USC quarterbacks are probably going to start this weekend in Cody Kessler and Carson Palmer. And there's a potential that, you know, if Dak Prescott got hurt, that Mark Sanchez could play as well. And I think John David Booty's on a roster somewhere. I'm not 100% sure about that. But thank God the Good Jets time. Are free of the USC quarterback conundrum. Before we get out of here, Brian, what are your thoughts on this game? Let's wrap it up and look towards the actual contest.
I want them to win. I desperately want them to win, because like you said, I don't think they're as bad as the Bill, or excuse me, I think they're better than the Bills. I don't think they're as good as the Bengals. So this is a good kind of litmus test, right, on where the Jets are. Are they above the line or below the line, right? And so I think if they win, I do think it'll be a squeaker, because as you said, there's some kind of strength against strength stuff at play here. So yeah. I think if the Jets win, it'll be close, you know, 4 points or 3 points or something like that. But I mean, for as good as their defensive front is, their whole defense on the whole has not been very good, right? So we've kind of turned into these barn burner shooting matches like we saw last week, right? So
yeah. No, I agree. I don't think this isn't a Jets team that's going to run away from a lot of people. You know, they're a good team. You know, they might run away from the Browns. They might run away from the Dolphins later in the season, or the 49ers. The Rams come to mind as well. But they're not going to run away from a team that's a fringe playoff team like the Chiefs. I think that we're looking at probably a 24-21, 27-24 game. If the Jets can get over 24 points, I think they should win this one. I don't think the Chiefs are capable of putting up anywhere close to 25 to 30 points. So I think if the Jets can eclipse the 24-point barrier, including hitting 24, I think this should be their game. I expect the Jets to win, and I don't really hide that. So we shall see what happens. I want to thank you guys all for listening. Make sure that you remember to find us in the SNY.TV audio network, which you can find wherever you listen to podcasts, but also make sure you find it on iTunes and rate and review us there. You can also search for SNY.TV Jets. You can also search for the Jets Blog Podcast to find our individual feed, as well as that'll bring you all Jets feeds. So like Game Pass, press conferences, interviews, all that stuff that happens on SNY. That's great audio content. Will be fed into that feed as well, and you guys will be able to listen to that as well as this show. For our part, we will be back on Monday with another edition of the postgame podcast, taking your calls and thoughts on the game, win or loss. And Brian will be giving you hot takes for days from @Brian_Bassett.
And Corey will give you lukewarm to sometimes you'll get the occasional scalding take @CoreyGriffinNBC.
It depends on what mood I'm in and how many beverages I've consumed. And that doesn't necessarily mean alcohol. That doesn't mean alcohol. Yeah. I've discovered like really strong coffee in the last week. And today I felt like I literally took 7 pills of Adderall at one point.
Throw some MCT oil into that stuff, bro. Oh,
it was ridiculous. Anyway, folks, thank you very much for listening. We hope you enjoy the game. We hope the Jets win. Until next time, keep calm and jet on.
Sour milk.
This has been the Jets Blog Podcast, part of the SNY.TV audio network.